Had this been an actual emergency, you would have heard us screaming for several hours and not us and not us talking calmly. As, I was thinking about this all day, but every now and then, have you noticed that like Hollywood seems to have this poster boy that they want to push on the public every now and then? Like this guy is the big thing now,
right? Yeah.
And it used to be like one point it was like Shia LaBeouf,
yeah,
like he was everywhere because he was in the Transformers, and then he was in what was it, Indiana Jones, and then he had his own, I don't forget the order, but he had a, like he was a in a movie like, what was it, Eagle Eye or something like that.
Yep, yep.
And then there was Sam Worthington.
Right.
Avatar, Terminator.
All seemingly having been poor bets.
Yeah, they were just like, but like, and Hollywood was doing this whole thing, like, you love this guy. Mm. You know, everybody he's the big star.
Everybody else is watching him.
Yeah, it's just like.
You haven't seen Avatar?
Yeah, it's got Sam Worthington. You love, you know, you're gonna love, just check this out. This kid's the golden boy.
It's like your mom telling you that you love meatloaf just to get you to eat the meatloaf.
Yeah.
It's like, we always have meatloaf, and you always love meatloaf.
You love meatloaf. Now I love meatloaf. Now, but when I was a kid, I did not.
And then he realized he loved Big Brother.
And I think like right now the new one is Jai Courtney.
Mm.
Because like he was the lead for Die Hard, A Good Day to Die Hard, the latest one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's also in the new Terminator. He was also in, I think it, one of his early first starring roles, not starring, but early roles was in that Tom Cruise movie, Jack Reacher, was it? Was it Jack Reacher? Yeah, I think so.
I don't remember that.
It was basically Tom Cruise playing a hard-boiled badass. He never does that. He's really branching out.
Yeah.
But yeah, he played like a thug in that one. But like that was the first time I heard of his name, and then like he started popping up here and there just like, okay, so this guy must be the new golden child of,
right.
And unfortunately, apparently his acting completely sucks. Like he's a piece of cardboard apparently. But I don't know. Have you noticed that like with Hollywood? Just
yeah, I have. And it goes beyond just actors, but you're right. Like for some, like I was watching last night. I had some people over for a barbecue, and we watched. We started watching anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon Blade, this Chinese movie about like ancient Chinese dynasty that somehow it's like an alternative history thing where Romans came into China,
mm-hmm.
and like they team up. I didn't get far enough into it because it was so bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was John Cusack and
what?
So it's so
for some reason they're like some high profile Western
exactly.
actors in it for some unfathomable reason. I heard about this.
I have to look it up real quick because it was so awful.
It was
I started watching it was because the preview was amazing. Like it looked really good.
Yeah.
But then it has Jackie Chan in it, so I should have thought, maybe I should have thought twice.
There's a chance that this could go goofy.
It's got John Cusack and Adrian Brody in it.
That's right, yeah.
And they play these two Roman generals who are basically, I mean, it's so transparent that it's kind of like a why can't we all get along thing between the Chinese and the Americans. Because the Roman soldiers are delivering their lines like Clint Eastwood in a World War II drama. Like, we need medicine for the prince, and then I need a place to think. It's so awful. Like, all the Chinese actors are speaking Chinese, except Jackie Chan, who speaks like broken English to get across that he's like slightly fluent in Latin for some reason. Like, there was no way that thematically the movie would not work unless they had like a 30-minute montage of one side learning Chinese or one side learning Latin. So they just make Jackie Chan speak broken English to this Roman guy who's speaking in this horrible, terrible American accent. And the acting is so bad, it's so obvious that John Cusack and Adrian Brody are just phoning it in for a paycheck. The dialogue is obviously written by a Chinese person who doesn't speak English, but they're just like these serious actors delivering bad English lines, and it's just, it was so cringeworthy. And there's that, I don't know about you, but I think a lot of, I hope this doesn't sound racist. Well, a lot of Chinese...
There's a podcast for
that. Yo, is this racist? I'm going to talk about that later.
Okay.
A lot of music and cinema from mainland China is kind of maudlin, kind of sappy. And that's true in a lot of like music in Asia, I find. It's like less so in Japan, maybe, but a lot of Chinese music is very sappy, very sentimental.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they shoot cinema is, I mean, there's a huge variety of styles for Chinese movies. But one, especially for like kung fu movies that are supposed to be really serious or mm-hmm. the kind of action movie, this thing is shot where there's a charge of horses and then they start cutting frames so that it looks like they're moving kind of jerky and slow motion. And it's meant to convey like seriousness or this kind of gravity, give this gravity to the scene, but it just looks ridiculous. And there's a scene where this Roman soldier is holding this kid and he's like crying. He's like overcome with emotion, but the acting is just so bad. It just looks like it looks like it was the first take and they're like, yeah, whatever, it's the Roman army, who cares?
There's something
bad.
This is extremely topical and also kind of, if people know this information, then they'll know exactly when we're recording. But last night, there's a new Death Note TV series.
Okay.
A TV, live action TV series adaptation of Death Note. And I believe most people listening will know what Death Note is, so I won't really have to regale them with and give them all the backstory for that. Yep. But they made a live action TV adaptation. And I did say in a previous podcast how like Japanese TV and movies like are not as separated as Hollywood separates them.
They have a tortured relationship.
Yeah, I kind of take that back.
Oh, really?
Because I think I got a migraine from watching.
Oh, no.
Because I've seen the live action. I've read the original Death Note. I've seen the live action movies. I've seen parts of the anime.
Okay.
And so I watched this live action TV series. And I used to think that like the movie was the acting of the Japanese actors was okay. It's passable. Is it okay? You know, not that different from TV, I thought.
Yeah.
And oh, how wrong I was.
do you think we apply different standards to say like live action and anime in terms of how OTT were allowed to accept characters?
There's that, and also I think because. I think there's a different perception. Like, part of the way the brain perceives it, I think, seems kind of different.
Yeah.
Because, like, anime, by its nature, is idealized stuff.
Mm.
Like, everything is simplified. Like, the character features, and they look ideal. So, we don't really mind them all that much.
Also, the fact that they're simplified means that we're willing to accept a lot more over-the-top, emotional, and, just the way people act is so exaggerated because it's making up for it, like, the simplified style, the visual style, right?
Yeah.
So, the stimulus that you're getting is a different balance.
Yeah. And so, this... the problem is, one of the biggest problems I have criticizing this is that I don't want to compare it to the source material because that's like, it feels like I'm comparing apples to oranges because they're different things.
Yes,
the source material is a manga, or an anime, or a movie, and that's different from TV. They're different mediums, so you have to gauge them differently. But even so, I just can't help but, like, see the seams. Like, they changed a lot of the settings. Do you know Death Note? Do you know the story at all?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I'll just say they changed the main character. He's no longer, he's not a genius anymore. Like, in the original, he was a genius. And they made him a normal person. And in the original story, he gets the Death Note, which basically lets you kill people just by writing their names in it. And he basically sets himself up as this god of vengeance, this god of order, who basically punishes the evil. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks up criminals and people who are wanted, things like that, who have their profiles and all that, and he just writes their name in it and kills them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are like, why are these people dying? It's like, is there some force out there that's, you know, striking down the evil? And he starts out, he gets the Death Note and he just becomes that. Mm-hmm. That's who he was. All he needed was to get the Death Note, and that's, you know, sets him on his path. Whereas in the TV series, they try very hard to make him a normal person. Try to make him accessible for the audience.
Maybe that's going back to what you were saying before. Maybe that's important in the sense that the audience can relate to him.
Yeah, I believe that's what they're doing. They're trying to make him relatable.
And then it becomes more of a moral dilemma because he's not this god figure.
He doesn't have that sort of evil inside of him. He doesn't start out that way. He just, through turn of events, he becomes that way, they're trying to do.
That seems a lot more interesting to
me. And the problem is that I can see that. Mm-hmm. I can see them doing that.
It's too obvious.
It's far too obvious. And I was just like, but that's comparing it, but at the same time, and then that compounded with the fact that the acting is all over the place. Like, there's the guy who plays the main character's father is good. Mm. Like, I believe him. He plays a police officer. He's not exactly your run of the mill standard police officer. He's like a detective or something above that. But he's okay. This is a guy with some sort of gravitas and experience, and he's a father. He has a family. He has tragedy in his life, and you can see all that in his acting. And I was just like, okay, I believe this guy.
Right.
Whereas other people. I won't specifically say who else, but other people, it's just like, oh, this is so ham-fisted and so. And I found myself remembering all my acting lessons, like everything every acting teacher ever told me, just, you know, used to yell at my classmates about, like, every acting stuff. I was just like, that's what they're talking about. That's what they're talking about. Yeah. Oh my God, this is acting 101. That's what they're...
It's like, it's interesting how that kind of understanding about a particular aspect of media makes you aware of it to the point that you can't ignore it.
Yeah.
And that brings up something I wanted to ask you about. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times there's this kind of elitism, especially in the West, among anime fans about preferring subs to dubs.
Mm-hmm.
And my Japanese is poor, but you're obviously bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a misperception in terms of voice acting quality between people who say, oh, I only watch anime with subtitles because I want to hear the original, like, soundtrack, versus people who, and those same people are saying, oh, well, the English dubbing is just terrible. Like, the voice acting is terrible. Like, Princess Mononoke has actually really good voice acting, comparatively speaking, for most animes. But I agree that the English voice acting is bad for most anime, but is the Japanese voice acting also just bad from a native speaker's perspective? Like, are they misperceiving the quality of the voice acting just because they don't speak Japanese?
As someone who has had training in voice acting, I will say no.
Really?
Veteran voice actors are unbelievably good.
Mm.
I think they get sort of shortchanged because people perceive the medium as they're not really acting, they're just making funny voices, and it's not that at all.
Okay.
It is acting. As during my voice acting training, they did not teach us voice acting at all. They taught us to act.
Right.
Like, we were given acting lessons, and they said, like, no, you're not gonna, we're not gonna, our head teacher when I was getting lessons was just said, like, no, you're not gonna be getting technique and voice acting technique lessons, no. Because that is not important.
It's not convincing.
No. Yes. Like, if you can't act, then you can't voice act.
Good point. Yeah.
And so, voice actors in Japan go through a lot of rigorous training. Mm. And there's also a huge amount of competition as well. So, the cream of the crop is what gets chosen in most cases.
Because that's what I felt like was happening in the Dragon Blade movie, is it wasn't... The English voice acting was horrible, and I think it's the same phenomenon with dubbing in anime, basing it off of what you're saying now, is that it's really not that important. It's kind of low-paid work.
Yeah.
So nobody really cares that much. But the difference is that in the case of anime dubbing, you're... voice acting is for a native audience, whereas the voice acting in this Dragon Blade movie was so they could have people speaking English in a Chinese movie, right? And so the quality, if you're not a native speaker of English, the quality really doesn't matter,
right?
Exactly. I mean, it's going to be dubbed anyway, or subbed anyway. Yeah. But in anime, the quality does matter because you're dubbing it for a native audience. Yeah. So
like I'm like you were saying as an example, like the Ghibli movies, they use like
they hire
actual veteran people, veteran actors.
Gillian Anderson voiced Mononoke, right?
Yeah. I can't say off the top of my head who did what, but yeah. Like they go for A-list actors, and a lot of actors like a lot of actors come out and say, like, I love Ghibli. I want to do it. Right. I want to do voice acting for that movie.
Yeah.
You get a lot of A-list actors doing that. And the quality difference between, like, a Ghibli dubbed and a standard dub anime, like your run-of-the-mill 13-episode on for 3 months and then you'll never hear of it again, anime is just... loads different. It's not even in the same ballpark anymore. Yeah. So yeah, there.
Right, so maybe there is something to the
sub versus sub. Yeah,
yeah. Even if you don't speak Japanese, like that, you can tell that you can usually tell the emotion is there. It's just my Japanese comprehension is not good enough to know whether it's good or not.
Yeah. There's also, I think, it's a very multifaceted issue because there's also the issue of the subtitles themselves.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
There is quality in subtitles. Actually, this is kind of unrelated, but I was with my friend Richard. We had a thing where the latest Fire Emblem game, there was a controversy because somebody said there is a scenario in it where you essentially cure somebody of lesbianism.
Oh God!
And there was controversy, like it's saying that this game is. Saying that they're curing, you know, it's promoting curing the gays. And you look at it, and the reason people were saying that is because of an unofficial translation was out there that totally mangled it and did not catch any of the context. And so it just distorted what was really there. So yeah, and that cost my friend a day's worth of work because he was looking all that up and trying to figure out what everyone was, you know, getting pissed about. And it turned out to be a non-issue because it was just a misinterpretation.
I was hoping Kat's actually on a business trip, but I was hoping she would be here because she did her master's thesis on this. In Japanese on especially for women's issues and women's voice in movies when foreign movies come to Japan, how they're subtitled in Japanese, and how there are gender issues and like cultural issues, cultural differences between Japan and the West that change not just the language, but change the context of how people are speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Like one good example, I've read her thesis. I sat down and read it in a whole day. It's so interesting. One example she gave, and I'll let her explain it more in the future, but one example she gave was in, what is it? Silence of the Lambs. When Jodie Foster comes to visit Hannibal Lecter in the prison, and their interaction, in the English dialogue, she is very forceful and powerful, and that is central to the movie, right? Because it's a competition between Hannibal Lecter's psychosis and Jodie Foster's character's like hard-nosed investigation, right? And she can't be affected, and like the not wanting to be affected by his insanity and his what a horrible human being he is. But in the Japanese subtitles, she's given this very deferential mode of speaking,
sort of,
which completely destroys the power of that scene, because it's supposed to be a contest of wills, and she's given this very low deferential Japanese mode of speaking, which is very Japanese is very gendered, so she's given this very gendered mode of discourse, which completely destroys the power of the scene. So that was sort of her the theme of her thesis, is how is translation and interpretation translation in Japanese subtitles can modify or distort the meaning of Western movies. It's really interesting.
That is very true. And it's the same other way around.
Yep.
That's what we're basically cutting back to the anime.
Yeah, stuff. Because English does not have that faculty, right? We don't have we don't have gender as a linguistic concept, and we don't have special modes for different sexes.
Right. And you're always going to get that lost in translation thing for subs or dubs.
Yeah.
Although I have found that it's less in subs. This is one of the reasons why I prefer subs to dubs. Is a really good subtitle. When you think back on the movie, you'll imagine or movie or anime or whatever, you'll imagine the actors saying the dialogue, they'll be saying the dubbed subtitle dialogue in their voices in your head.
Really?
Really good subtitles will do that. Like, you think back on a foreign movie, like a Japanese movie with English subtitles, you'll imagine the character speaking in English. Really good subtitles.
That's interesting.
But,
I imagine as someone who's bilingual and is as bilingual as you are, that's a really interesting experience to both hear the spoken dialogue and read the subtitles. And you can sort of see what was going on in the translator's mind.
Yeah. And every now and then a subtitle will blow my mind.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, that is perfect.
Cats told me on several occasions that when she's watching a movie that's subtitled, she can tell who subtitled it.
Yes.
Based on what word choice or phrase, idiom choice they made. She's like, yeah, that's definitely her, or that's definitely him.
Yeah.
Because it's so idiomatic and so refined that you can, it's like a fingerprint. You can tell who did it.
Yeah. And speaking of, I saw Jurassic Park. Which was not Jurassic World, Jurassic Park, because preview for Jurassic World, which isn't out in Japan yet, but it's coming out this month. But I watched it with subtitles, because I was watching it with my girlfriend.
Okay. So you were going back to watch it as a preview for watching.
It's like, you don't need to watch two or three, but you do need to watch one. And she's my girlfriend's already seen one, but we want to just get it back up to speed. And we're watching it, and my girlfriend just says, are these subtitles by Natsuko Toda?
Exactly, right. She does like 90% of everything, right?
Not 90% anymore,
a
but
lot.
Yeah, she does a lot.
She's quite elderly now, right?
Yeah, and she should not be subtitled.
That was one of the, in, you know what, actually, I want to save this for when Kat's here to talk about it, because she's the one who wrote it, so she should talk about it.
Yeah,
but that's a really interesting, we could talk about, we'd do a whole show on that. It's very interesting.
But trying to find my train of thought on previous when we were talking about anime subtitles dubs. One of the biggest problems in translating, and I'm running into this in my independent translating work, freelance translating work, is that when you're certain things, like you can some words for word you can translate no problem, like bus, truck, seat, you can translate that no problem. But when it comes to a sentence, when you translate it, the length will change.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm sure you've encountered this in any translating stuff you've ever run into. It's just like the length of the sentence will change.
Yeah,
and when it comes to spoken dialogue, and you're dubbing it, you have a very limited amount of, like, you have how many seconds that person is saying something,
mm-hmm.
and you have to fit something in there. It has to fit.
Yeah, that's even worse than just direct translation. Like, in direct translation, you're limited to a certain number of characters per line that will fit on the screen.
Yeah, right? Subtitles is, but even so, subtitles is much easier.
Right.
Subtitles are infinitely easier.
But with spoken dialogue, it actually has to stop. They have to stop talking when their lips stop moving.
Yeah,
right?
They have to stop when they've stopped talking. They also have to, like, everything has to fit in what they're saying, and you have to find a way to. And
well, that just shows the genius of something like Ghibli,
yeah.
where they actually have good voice acting. I mean, yeah. anime because, you know, we were talking before the facial expressions and the visuals are so simplified.
Hmm.
It's a lot easier to fit things in and to make dialogue fit, but at the same time, when they stop talking, they have to be done, right?
Yep.
So that just shows the genius of and the acting capabilities of the people doing the translations and the voice acting.
I mean, this is going back to a previous episode when Sarah was here. I actually, on a whim or sort of by a suggestion of Richard, actually my friend, I took the Japanese version of Frozen's, the theme, not the theme, but the song from Frozen, mm-hmm. Let It Go.
Yeah.
I took that, the Japanese version of it, and retranslated it back into English.
Mm.
Like the Japanese version, which was translated from English to Japanese and then translated back, sort of like a manual for a piece of equipment.
Right.
And Sarah read it, and it's completely different.
It is, but it's also masterful. The translation into the Japanese version of the Let It Go song is beautiful.
It is good, but like certain things are gone. Like,
yes.
You listen to the English version and then you listen to the Japanese and translate it back to English. It's like, where did that?
Can you give an example? Like,
not off the top of my head. I don't remember. Haven't had it memorized, but yeah, certain like things are changed, and that happens, and that's essentially the lost in translation.
Yeah,
and that's one of the, as going back, why I prefer subs to dubs is it's much less with subs because they have that leeway of the person is talking for this amount of time. And it's a lot easier to read than to, you know, to hear and have them say and limited by what, you know, the movement of the mouth and things like that.
I was actually kind of bored with the movie Lost in Translation, the Bill Murray movie.
Yeah.
But it actually kind of, the kind of melancholy of it is a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not interested in Japan or you've been here too long, the feeling of that movie is exactly how you feel. And I caution people who think they want to live in Japan forever. You're going to feel how you felt during that movie at some point. Unless you're just totally in love with Japan, then you'll be okay. But everybody sort of runs out of steam after a while.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring it up is because, the best joke in that movie is the translation joke at the beginning.
The intro joke. I was just about to say that.
Where he's like, the director of the commercial is going on for like 20 seconds and trying to tell Bill Murray how to act. And the translator just says, more feeling. Bill Murray's character is like, he sounds like he said a lot.
I love that.
It's a great joke. It's fantastic.
And it's
totally
so true.
It's totally true. And it's funny, like, watching that movie with somebody who speaks Japanese well, they're like, yeah, that's actually, it's not a joke.
Yeah.
Like, the translator is actually telling him what to do. Like, she's not being condescending.
Yeah.
She's just translating, but the director is so flowery and over the top and like so artsy fartsy that she's like, you don't need to know all this shit. Just more feeling.
yes. Translation, like Lost in Translation, and honestly for me is worth it just for that scene alone.
Well, and Japanese and English are such different languages. Nothing, one way or the other, nothing translates exactly. Like, it's all about, that's why people who are translators and interpreters, English Japanese or English Chinese or Korean or languages which are linguistically very far from one or the other, are sort of like the creme de la creme, because they're not just human dictionaries. They have this sort of faculty where they can instantly change the nuance of one language into another. Yeah. And that's something that most people can't do.
Yeah. I mean, doing translation, the very first trap you will always fall into is your
direct interpretation, direct translation,
exactly,
word for word.
You are going to translate exactly what's written,
yep,
and then you will fuck up.
Yep. Then you will run into de-lesbianizing characters,
yeah, yes,
stuff like that.
Oh my god!
So what? Have you seen any other movies?
I saw Avengers 2.
Yep.
Very happy, so I can now return to Facebook.
Because your self-imposed quarantine is over.
I saw Avengers 2. I saw Mad Max Fury Road.
So it's out in Japan now.
Yes, it is still out. It's been out for a month.
Okay.
I wanted to see it in 4DX, which is that sort of, it's D-Box with a few extra effects. Like, they have flashing lights, and they have, like, it sprays, like, they have water sprays, they have
awesome
wind and things like that. And it's not just the rumble seat.
Yeah, Kat and Sarah went to see it at IMAX in Austin. Kat went to see Sarah recently, and they said it was amazing in 3D.
Yeah.
3D IMAX.
Yeah, but I like, the thing is that the 4DX, well, there's different, that's a weird thing. There are different names for it. It's either 4DX, MX4D, or I think there's something else. But, like, they have different, because the developing company is different.
So, like, it's basically, like, spray you with water, blow hot air in your face.
Yeah, they even have, like, smells and things like that. And, like, yeah. And every now and then, like, depending on the scene, they'll have smoke in the room and stuff like that. So, like, when you like, after a big explosion or something, there'll be smoke. Yeah. I wanted to see Mad Max and that, because
I'm so embarrassed that I haven't seen it yet. I really want to, just from all the press it's gotten and how it's just riled everybody up. I love it.
And I think, like, I'm not 100% sure, but from the atmosphere, like, the sense I'm getting is people prefer Mad Max to Avengers 2.
Mm.
And, like, Mad Max, everyone's talking about Mad Max. Avengers 2 also came out, and for some reason, Twitter is still abuzz about Mad Max.
Mm.
And
I think a lot of it has to do with just the controversy of, there's a lot of controversy attached to the Reddit crap, right?
Yes. I think also that, but the way I look at it is that I see, like, Mad Max is, like, a four-digit, like, you know, $1,000 hooker, and Avengers 2 is and Avengers 2 is, you know, is like your girlfriend or your wife, like I'm not saying that's a bad comparison, but like, okay, I'm not saying like together, but I'm saying like two different things, like, because like one is like one shot, really amazing experience, where one is like this secure, happy relationship. So, to quantify it, I love Avengers 2.
So much I could unpack in this analogy.
Yeah. I like, Avengers 2 is just like, I'm coming home again. Like,
sure,
we're going to see it, I'm coming home, I love it. It's just like, it's not just like that flash spur of the moment, oh my god, this is amazing.
Mm, yeah.
I just, it is that for me, but it's also, it's just like, it's got this secure place in my heart.
So you think Mad Max is more of a spectacle?
Mad Max is a spectacle, but it was definitely fun, and I understand completely.
But the difference between a spectacle and a good $1,000 hooker, you go to see it again.
Yeah,
the measure of that kind of titillation and just like sensory overload is, it can't just be that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because a movie like, I actually like the movie Waterworld,
mm-hmm,
but that was a movie I liked when I was 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you go back and watch it, it's cheesy as hell,
right?
It's horrible.
Yes.
But it had the kind of same, you know, just explosions and, you know, action, constant action,
mm-hmm,
that Mad Max had, but Mad Max, I still haven't seen the movie, but just from all the, you know, people telling me about it, it's so much better than that. It's so much more artful.
Yes.
That you can go, I mean, I think Sarah went to see it like 3 or 4 times.
You can appreciate it.
You can appreciate it over and over
again. Yeah, you can appreciate it on many different levels.
Yeah.
And whereas, again, going back, Avengers 2 was like coming home to a familiar face.
Yeah.
And I really love that too. So, I mean, I would, like, if I was to say you can only choose one, Avengers 2 or Mad Max, I would go with Avengers 2.
Mm. All right.
But I probably had more fun at Mad Max. That's the thing. I probably, because I saw, like, one after the other.
Right.
And I probably, yeah, I probably had more fun at Mad Max, which wasn't, I saw in 2D, standard with subtitles.
We should go see it together.
You wanna? Sure.
Yeah, let's go see it.
It's still playing. It should still be playing for a while. I mean, probably all this month, probably, but.
Okay.
I really loved Avengers. Just like, yeah. Avengers 2, it's just like, for me, yep. That's solid. That's a solid. So like, if I was to grade the two, like, on a rating of like 1 to 10, and because of the fact that I never give anything a 10, I would give Avengers a 9,
mm-hmm.
and I would give Mad Max maybe a 7,
mm.
but a really strong 7.
All right.
So,
fair enough.
Yeah.
How about other media?
Other media?
Video games.
Video games? I haven't really had a chance to play video games because I hurt my back a while. Yeah.
You're saying you just noticed that your back was bad
when
you were playing video games.
Well,
you
yeah.
stand up.
I was playing video games and my back hurt. Ow. Yeah. So that was for a couple of weeks and that was a horrible time. So I've basically been playing like Grand Theft Auto 5.
Okay.
I've been going because I got the PS4 version and it's just like, ooh, it's prettier and I
nice.
Having fun.
That game is really fun, but my problem is I think I'm too old school in games. I'm very completionist.
Yeah.
Kind of open world games where you know you're never going to see it all just sort of frustrates me from the beginning to where I almost kind of like being led down the path. Like,
yeah.
I kind of like the set narrative.
I'm getting there too.
It's like I like video games, those kind of, like Final Fantasy and things like that. I like the set narrative. I like the story.
Yeah.
I don't like the fact that I could, you know, I haven't played a Final Fantasy game in forever, but I could go off on a side quest tangent that might last 20 game hours. Mm. Like, or there's some Easter egg somewhere that I'm never gonna see because I'm not good enough.
Mm.
Like, that kind of stuff really, that's why I quit playing WoW.
Yeah.
Because, like, World of Warcraft used to be classic World of Warcraft back in the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
you could see everything. Like, you could go and do all the content. And now it's just so expansive. There's so many achievements. There's instances that are 2 expansions old that nobody ever wants to do again, but I need them to get this other achievement or,
yeah.
like, this mount or something. Like, I'm so frustrated with how content bloated the game has become to satisfy a certain demographic I don't belong to that I just don't want to play it anymore.
And I also like, especially about the open worlds, because I love open world games.
Yeah, the concept is amazing, but it's just
the fact that
if I'm reminded that I'm playing a game or if I'm not involved in the community to the point where I want to be in that world, then I just get frustrated.
Because I'm a completionist, and I know there are some things that I will never be able to do, that frustrates me. But what frustrates me even more than that is when they lock something I really want behind that. Like, for example, Grand Theft Auto 4, if you wanted, because all the Grand Theft Auto games have cheats,
right?
But Grand Theft Auto 4 locked some of its cheats behind the 100% mark. So, like, you couldn't get unlimited. You couldn't, like, you had a max amount of ammo you could have. You couldn't break that limit.
Unless you did everything.
Unless you got 100%, and I could not stand that.
That's awful.
And I was just like, And, of course, this was before the PlayStation 3 implemented achievements.
Right.
So I just was like, fuck this, and I got, like, I downloaded a save game file that was 100%, and I just fucked around with that. But, yeah.
Well, something even worse than that is, the thing I really hated with that they introduced in WoW was world events that weren't repeatable.
Mm.
And so you could get achievements. For example, when Cataclysm came out, which was the expansion where Deathwing came back,
mm-hmm.
and sort of changed the map.
I have no idea what you're talking about, so but there, nevertheless.
The world was set, and it's in zones, right? And the zones had set maps, and you knew the territory, you knew the terrain. There was an expansion that came out called Cataclysm, where this black dragon came back and basically fucked up the world. And zones changed, zones split. Basically, the old landscape was gone. And there was this new expansion where the landscape was different. But there was a set time where this, you know, you install Cataclysm, and then for like, I think the way it works is like a month, you could play the game, and then this event happened where Deathwing came back. And if you were around when he came back and he killed you, you got a special achievement that was like killed by Deathwing during this certain event. And if you weren't online at that time, there was no way you could ever get that event.
Oh yeah.
You could never get that achievement. Like
I hate those
times. Yeah. Like I have to be logged in to get this reward or something. Yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah. I am never going to be able to get this. And
like when I quit WoW, I was afraid to type /played, which was a script command which would tell you how much cumulative time you had played the game, because it was something like more than 200 days or something. Like I had literally played this game for like 6 months of my life straight, 24 hours a day, right? It's the cumulative time you played the game. So I think I had invested quite a bit of time in this game, but the fact that I wasn't logged in at a particular time meant I couldn't experience this thing that the game had to offer, and that just pissed me off. And they don't do that very often, but the fact that the game has become so bloated and so expansive and, like, you just can't do all the content just sort of frustrates me. Yeah. And I'm too old school. I'm too straight-line narrative. I mean, I like reading books. And maybe that's just my personal flaw as an old guy. But
And also another thing is that, like, when you get older, everyone's going to go through this.
Yeah.
You don't get enough time to play video games anymore.
I don't like change.
Yeah. And so, like, you won't have the time that you used to as a student or as an, you know, an infant to play video games. And so that took some adjusting for me.
Although, I think as a company, as a game company goes, Blizzard is actually doing a really good job. I just started playing Heroes of the Storm, which is, it's like Blizzard's answer to Dota, Defense of the Ancients. You know, I forget what that genre of game is called. It's kind of like a tower defense.
I have no idea. Okay. Dota is something that I am completely...
I never got into it before either. Yeah. But a couple of friends of mine in Japan... started playing it, and they really liked it, so they invited me to play, and it's free to play. It's one of those cost plus things where you can pay to unlock stuff, and it's a really good business model, actually.
It's manipulative as fuck.
Manipulative, but they make a ton of money off of it.
I do have a personal rule with that. It's that invest enough in that game of my time and emotion into that game that I think it's worth it, I will pay up to a full price game. If that game is worth it for me. Like if I say, okay, yeah, I'm in for the long haul. I'll put it about as much as of like a $60.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, but it's a really good sort of tower defense game. You can play up to 5 players on each side. And it's all the sort of characters and heroes from other Blizzard games. So if you've played a lot of Blizzard games, it's kind of a nostalgic.
Like StarCraft?
StarCraft, Diablo. I started playing Diablo 3 again recently, which is...
Welcome back.
Such a good game.
Welcome back to Addiction.
Yeah.
Hi, Tony.
Diablo, the quest for stuff. But yeah, Heroes of the Storm is great if you like, especially if you like multiplayer strategy games. It's really good. It's not resource-based, so it's all combat-based. It's really fun. And also, we have to talk about... we have to talk about a resurrection of PT.
Yes. Okay. So, yes, Konami, I don't know what they were thinking. Oh, I also have some more Konami news.
Do you? Right, let's hear it.
A new fuck-up. Okay, so we previously...
What is wrong with this company?
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, so, Konami has recently gotten a lot of ire from me, because I used to love everything they put out, and then they've turned into something I don't recognize anymore. Yeah. It's just like, you know, like my son came back and was hooked on crack and had killed somebody. It's just you're not my son anymore. It's just like, but I, like, recently, I didn't really notice what was sort of rotting underneath the, underneath until, like, recently when it all just came out in the open, the whole Kojima stuff, conspiracy, and then, like, Kojima getting his name whitewashed from all the stuff, like, all the Metal Gear stuff.
Sort of pulled back the veil on a pretty rotten situation.
And then, like, Konami said, like, they're pulling out of console games and focusing on mobile, and they've got their, we talked previously about their other stuff, but this, something happened recently, very recently, where they, one of their properties, is called, Powerful Pro Baseball. It's a series where you basically build your own baseball team. It's focused generally on Japanese teams.
Okay.
I think they do have like a Western baseball team edition, but
this is basically the Japanese equivalent of like Madden.
Yeah. And although it's a lot cuter, it's a lot cuter, it's called Success, campaign, I guess you would call it, where you create your own character, is a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a mobile edition, a smartphone edition. And one of the big things in Japan, I don't know what it's called in the West, this thing. It's called, in Japan, Japanese, it's called gacha. It's based on those little capsules.
Yeah.
They're called gacha.
We kind of don't have that.
It's basically a random draw thing where you.
Yeah, I would say the closest equivalent would be like we have those, but it's more for like candy and things like that. Like you never really get, or you get little charms for your keychain or something.
Or
stickers.
It's like the prize at the bottom of a cracker jack box.
Yeah.
It's like you don't know what you're gonna get.
It's just junk, but the fun is in putting a quarter in and you get something random.
And the random draw thing. And the thing is that apparently they had an event. Like they advertised like, you know, this sort of event for the game for a limited time, and they had this special gacha, which would supposedly you'd be able to get certain characters, and it turns out that those characters weren't in it.
Oh,
like you could spend as much money as you want and do as many random draws as you could do. And you would never get those characters. They were not in it, apparently.
Really? So it wasn't even in the running.
It wasn't something like that. There was a 0.00001% chance you would get one.
So they were just using it as advertising to make you spend money.
Yeah, apparently. It may not have been their intent, and they've apologized and said, like, everybody who's paid, we will give, like, who paid to, you know, to do the random draw thing, we will give you a special ticket that will get you the card. Like,
really?
The very limited edition card. But that's obviously not going over well.
Yeah.
People are just like,
give me my fucking money.
Yeah, that's
back.
Like, that is fucking false advertising.
It is.
So
it's like a 1984 lottery where nobody ever wins.
There was no top prize ticket in there to begin with. So yeah, and I just found out about that today. So that was just like, oh my. Yeah.
Don't need any more bad press.
No, really don't. Especially when you say you're going to focus on the mobile. And then the very first news I read about, like, their mobile business is that they've done this, intentional or not. So, one of the things that they did that really depressed me was the fact that they canceled Silent Hills.
Right.
And I think that depressed a lot of people. But it looks like we might be getting a spiritual successor.
Yeah, there's a independent group of people, and I'm not exactly sure what their affiliation is, whether they're completely independent or they're like doing a collaborative effort. I haven't seen any company name, like anything corporate associated with them, which is probably intentional because they probably don't want to get sued. But there's an independent effort to make a game called Allison Road, which recently came out with a trailer. Let me see, I've got the guys.
A very freaky trailer.
It's pretty good. I mean, I think to be honest, I think the PC trailer was creepier. Mm-hmm. just because of the surrealism of mm-hmm. going through the same hallway over and over again.
Yeah.
Just that part of it was so bizarre and sort of Twilight Zone-ish that mm-hmm. it added a whole nother level of horror. But the physics engine, it's the Unreal 4 mm-hmm. engine, which is being built in, and it looks photorealistic. I mean, it's just like PT in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Although PT was the Fox engine, which is...
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
oh,
that's Kojima Studios' own,
okay.
their own development.
But I think they're using Unreal 4.
Okay, for Allison Road.
For Allison Road. Guy named Christian Kessler... I read an interview with him.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the website I read it, but he's one of the lead designers, and it's interesting because PT was meant to be a teaser for Silent Hills, which mm-hmm. probably wasn't going to happen inside of a house.
No.
The hallway repeating over.
It was like PT right. was not the game.
Like if you looked at the original PT game and mm-hmm. you looked at some of the trailer. Like with the worm chasing you down the hallway right. and everything, it was clear that they were not going to base it in a house.
No.
But the Allison Road game is taking either taking the same approach mm-hmm. of releasing sort of a claustrophobic, you know, in a I think it's kind of an English
mansion,
English townhouse, yeah, kind of thing. That kind of approach of a claustrophobic atmosphere for a teaser,
mm-hmm.
or they've basically made a game based on PT, which I'm not sure which it is yet.
But it atmospherically, it feels very...
It's very close.
It's got those same cold chills running down
yeah,
my spine.
It's not quite as... They released a gameplay trailer. It was about 15 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get quite as surreal
mm-hmm.
as PT does. But I think they've got they've certainly got the visuals down.
Yeah.
it looks just like PT. It's down to the photorealism, like the environment interaction is actually better than PT.
Yeah.
You can pick things up, you can equip items, you can do and interact with, like you can zoom in on the DVD collection in their yeah. office and read the titles of every DVD and like the detail is ridiculous.
And you can, like you can pick up the remote, you can turn
yep,
the TV,
turn the TV
on.
Off, you can pick up, there's a butcher's knife in the kitchen you can pick up.
And it's got a little ghost girl who,
and there's a girl, yeah.
I like that. I
walk back into the hall yeah. from the bathroom, and she's standing right there.
I forget which one of Kotaku's writers did an article on it, but who like introducing this thing. But they did a GIF mm-hmm. of like the girl at just. It's just like no. So yeah, probably.
Well, I really hope it succeeds because it looks like it could be really good.
It'd be nice if it like got picked up by a publisher. It's just like
yeah. If it does, it's going to happen soon because mm-hmm. it's really high quality.
Yeah. And really. It would also be a very cathartic, spiritual
yeah.
finger to Konami saying, "Look what you missed out on.
Exactly.
You could have done this," and just
yep.
like yeah.
Yep.
But
somebody else is going to make your money.
Yeah, Allison Road just, it looks amazing. I don't think I'll ever be able to play it. Because, yeah, I've had trouble. Like, I still haven't cleared PT. I don't think I ever will be able to, although it is on my PS4.
Yeah, yeah but, I mean, nothing says that Silent Hills had to be as arcane
mm-hmm.
and sort of random and non... Oh, what do you... irrational as PT mm-hmm. was. Like, I think they intentionally made it that way so that it would be unpredictable.
Yeah.
And people just sort of said, oh, well, you have to do these certain things
yeah.
to do it.
Well,
like, once you figured out the system, people are pretty smart, right?
Yeah.
When people figured out the system. But I think that wasn't their intention. Their intention yeah. was for it to be totally random and, like, nonsensical.
It was,
that was scary.
It was also meant to be... another thing is that you have to remember, it was PT was meant to be a puzzle to unlock, to find out that they were making
that it
Silent
was Silent
Hills,
Hills right.
that they were
yeah.
going to make Silent Hills.
But there was, I think the genius in that sort of viral marketing would be one person would figure it out by accident
yeah.
and then go on Twitter and say, "Holy shit, guys, look,
yeah.
it's Silent Hills."
And then
everyone would be trying to figure it out. Like, trying to figure out the system was
yeah.
part of the viral marketing.
Yeah. And I they, like, more game companies should do that, honestly.
Yeah, I think it was genius. It was fantastic. It was, you know, a company that's made so many bad decisions. I have to wonder who came up with that.
I get the feeling it was Kojima.
Yeah, probably. And somebody who actually had a brain.
And he might be, well, like, again, we won't know until honest, I don't think we'll know until Metal Gear Solid 5 comes out.
Yeah.
And which is September, I think, like, 2nd. Or 3rd or something in the States. I think it's like the 4th in Japan.
Well, it'd be right, but just in time for me to move back.
Yeah, just for, and just around the corner. And I'm really kind of interested in seeing, because I'm going to be going, TGS is after it comes out. Like, right. TGS is in September. So I'm kind of interested in seeing what's going to happen at TGS. Is Kojima going to show up, and what he's going to say?
Hmm.
I also hope that, honestly, if things are as bad as they've been speculated, like, as really, like, not kosher, like, how Kojima was basically unceremoniously dumped by Konami, basically outed, I really hope he puts something inside Metal Gear Solid 5 that's just a huge middle finger to Konami. And I really hope there's something in there that you won't run into intentionally. It'll
we'll
tap
have to see a picture of Kojima's badge for the TGS and see who sponsored his badge.
Yeah. I hope something's in Metal Gear Solid 5, and I hope somebody finds it, and I hope it explodes as news.
Yeah.
It's just like, I really do. I really, really do. It's like kind of like his last hurrah. He's just like, his last, like, middle finger, I'm out sort of thing to Konami.
He's rich. He can afford to tell someone to piss off.
After he's free, he'll probably do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And do it for a new project.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it'll also...
Who knows? And maybe he's just waiting for TGS, and then he...
Yeah.
You know what would be awesome is if he was just waiting for TGS to be over, and then signed on with the Allison Road project and got them signed to somebody. That would be awesome.
Or just, like, at TGS, it's just like...
Yeah. Allison Road is quite good. It's actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
I'm really interested. All he'd have to say.
Yeah. I'm really interested in that. I'm just like... Yeah, or, like, because he always does this, like, makes some very vague hint at something.
Yeah,
and everyone will,
that.
Yeah. He is a very good marketer of things.
Yep.
And, yeah, if he does a Kickstarter, it will make its goal.
Whoever is working on Allison Road right now, if they're not at least trying to talk to Kojima, they're an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, they need to try to contact him and make some inroads, and, like, only good things could happen from that. Because it sounds like he really wanted to work on it. And
On Silent Hills.
In Silent Hills. And was prevented from doing so.
Yeah.
Done then.
Again, with Allison Road, it could actually, that would be great. Like, if it turns out it was Kojima all along.
I would love the Schadenfreude of that.
Yeah, just like, turns out, after Metal Gear Solid gets released, and then all of a sudden Allison Road, like, it...
Well, surely there, I imagine there must have been something in his contract that would prevent him from doing that.
I believe that's why he's so quiet, why he's not saying anything. I don't think it would be in his nature not to do or say something.
But if it's somebody, if it really is truly independent, then he could probably sign on with no connection.
But, like, if that happens, like, if it's truly independent and he signs on, I wonder what role he would have, like, because I think he likes being in the top. Likes being in control. Like, the Metal Gear Solid series, every single game is essential. Aside from Metal Gear Rising, which was Platinum Games, that aside, like, every single Metal Gear Solid game was his. It has his fingerprints all over it.
That might be difficult unless he forms his own studio then, because otherwise he'd basically have to get them signed to something, and then we wouldn't hear about it until they were signed. And it would be different developers, and So,
but in terms of what's going to happen,
it's a cool dream.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited on multiple levels, but
yeah.
Where'd the segue go?
I don't know.
So, anyways, what else is going on? guys right now? This thing, because like I'm trying to think of topics that we've been that we said we were going to talk about.
Oh well, I'm going to leave.
All right. Yes.
Speaking of,
if you don't like it, you can always leave.
Yeah. No, speaking of, it, I'm done with being discriminated against.
Yeah.
Racism is too much. I'm out of here.
No.
Yeah.
Due to work issues,
I'm here on a work visa for my company in America, and they recently decided to call me back. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to leave in September.
Okay. Lost another co-host.
about 2 months, yeah. Okay. It was short and sweet.
Going back again, how long have you been in Japan now?
September 1st will be 5 years. Exactly 5 years. Yeah. It's a good run. I enjoyed it. But yeah, things are changing and in our business, and I'm in the semiconductor business, so... as you probably know, a lot of tech and advanced businesses are sort of moving to different parts of Asia as they sort of come up to speed, and manufacturing costs are lower. So, and especially for computer chips, things are moving towards more like a foundry model, which is basically like contract manufacturing.
Yeah.
And that's very popular in Korea and Taiwan. So if you've got an iPhone in your hand, most of the chips that are in there, if they're not like really specialized pieces, were probably made in either Samsung or TSMC, which is in Taiwan.
And your iPhone is not worth what you're paying for.
No, it's not.
Like, take it up completely apart and put together, like, and calculate the price of everything that's in it. It's not worth.
There's a reason that when we had the government shutdown in the U.S., was it about 5 or 6 years ago, when there was a political standoff in the legislature,
when the Republicans were going we don't get our way,
when they weren't getting their way and they were blocking budget approval, there was a reason that Apple had more cash than the U.S. government at one point, and it's because you paid $700 for your iPhone.
I wonder do you know how much
cash?
An iPhone, like, to manufacture.
How much it costs?
Yeah, like all the components.
Well,
what would you assume?
What, retail price for an iPhone 6 is about $750,
around that,
right?
Yeah.
For a 64 gig iPhone, middle of the line, right? Cost? Probably $200 to $300.
So that's about $200 to $300.
It's a 100 to 200% markup.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, in terms of IT and tech, hardware is sort of like the old model.
Yeah.
You make all your money on apps and software and basically intangible assets, right? IP, things like that. That's where companies like Apple are making all their money. iTunes, things like that. The hardware is just incidental. But the fact that Apple can be as successful as they are, be as progressive as they are in terms of business model, and still charge you a 200% premium on your iPhone, you're a sucker. but it is a good product.
Well, it works for them.
It's a good phone. But yeah, their PR is insane.
Yes.
Like their marketing, Apple's investment is in their marketing,
and it works.
Their public image, and it's very effective. Like I can sit here and say this, like say that Apple's success is based on their marketing, and look at my phone and think, I love you.
Yes.
That kind of double think means that you've succeeded.
Yes.
As a company.
Yep. I, on the other end, have an Android.
All right. Yeah. Well, I've got a Sony Xperia as well. I just don't use it anymore.
Oh. Yeah. Anyways.
It's a good phone.
Yeah. Honestly, I think, and I get the feeling that I'm becoming like a Sony worshipper because a lot of the stuff I have is Sony. And
you know what? Sony, after being maligned for so many years, they are actually, in terms of brand, I think they're coming back a bit. They sort of, I think they took a page out of Apple's book, realizing that all their tech needs to be sort of brand integrated. And their camera system and their phone system and their speaker system. Like, I've got a external Bluetooth speaker there, but that's got, what is the, it's got the symbol is an N. It's like the proximity Bluetooth thing
that
Sony developed?
You lost me.
Oh, God, I can't remember. Anyway, basically, you just put your phone on top of that thing.
Oh,
that
okay,
speaker
yeah.
system, and it automatically interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
And TFS. No, no, that's a cell phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. but, yeah, they've sort of integrated their all their media,
mm-hmm.
and all their products are sort of in the same family. So
yeah.
you can, if you own everything Sony, it all works together.
Yeah, that's really nice.
They're a big part of their marketing is the Sony experience.
Yeah, but one place I think they fuck up with is the proprietary memory sticks.
Yeah.
That is certain areas just should not be exclusive, sort of like
yeah.
only this sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Like they I think they've gotten better. Like some of their stuff does take SD cards, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, for the longest time, like I love my PlayStation Vita. I love it to death. I hate the fact that the memory card does not work with anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although that is partially due to the fact because hackers crack the PSP. So,
yeah.
Sony has gotten... Yeah, because you heard the E3 happened between our last podcast and now.
Mm-hmm.
And have you heard about, like, the Xbox One got backwards compatibility? For limited games, which is amazing.
Yes.
But the PlayStation 4 cannot.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a misnomer. The PlayStation 4, as far as my understanding goes, it cannot do PlayStation 3. Because the PlayStation 3, I think, listen to people much smarter than I talk about it, because I only know like what they've said, but it's architecturally different, the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation mm-hmm. 4, like basically yeah. worlds apart. It has to do with the processor of the PlayStation 3, which does different stuff. So the PlayStation 4 physically cannot emulate the PlayStation 3, so you can't backwards compatibility that.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you can't. I don't think that means you can't backwards compatibility with PlayStation 2 or 1. And I think they can. I think if they wanted to, they can. This is just my speculation. The biggest reason that they won't is because that leaves them open to hacking.
Yeah.
Because the PlayStation 1 games and PlayStation 2 games are much weaker.
Yes.
In terms, like, because
they weren't designed for a system that's
yeah.
internet connected and
yeah,
network, like cloud based, right?
So, yeah. But also the fact that like the PS Vita, which is very secure, it is so secure, it's got its head up its own ass. it's so secure because like you need a specific program to interface it with your computer. You cannot do that sort of thing where you hook it up and then you can drag and drop. That does right. not work because you need a specific program to go in the intermediate program that says, no, I don't like this stuff. You can't go in the Vita.
Yeah.
But people have found a way, crackers have found a way. It's just like, that's racist. But hackers, people who crack consoles.
They're probably not crackers.
But hackers found a way. What happened with the PSP was they busted that thing wide open.
Right.
And so they could essentially have the game, the PSP play copies of games.
Mm.
You could take a game, you could extract all the digital data from it, and then you could put it online, someone could download it, put it into their memory stick, and they could play it on their PSP without paying for it. You could essentially download the entire PSP library mm-hmm. without paying a cent.
Right.
And that was not good for Sony.
Nope.
So they made it very extremely anal about the Vita, which is why it's so extremely lockdown secure, and the PS4 is like that too.
Mm-hmm.
But what hackers have found is that by manipulating the save data for PSP games that can be emulated on the PS Vita, they can sort of find some workarounds to do stuff with the Vita, which doesn't really stick and doesn't really hold,
yeah.
but they can do stuff. And Sony does not like that at all, and Sony doesn't want that. And if that's possible for like PS2 and PS1 games, like if you have a save data that is essentially a virus,
mm-hmm.
and put it in your PS4 and emulate it, and then it turns out you can crack the PS4, that would be very bad for Sony. So they're not really, unless they're assured that it's 100% secure,
yeah.
they're not going to put backwards compatibility in that.
People are really ingenious.
Yes.
I have to say, like, computer, if there's one thing that computers have proven, it's that people are incredibly ingenious when they have a motivation.
Yeah.
Like, hacking and internet security and all of this is just a testament to, like, sometimes I just think, oh, we're just stupid hairless monkeys, right? Like, we're really kind of dumb, but these kind of situations, you realize how ingenious people are.
Do you know how
when they have a motivation, when there's something that a human wants so bad, we can actually be geniuses.
Do you know how they cracked the PSP?
No.
Well, what they started out with was, again, using save data, hacked save data, and running specific games, which had a flaw or a weakness in it that they could be exploited.
Yeah.
But what they found out eventually was that the PlayStation Portable PSP's battery had its own program in it.
Right.
And they hacked
like power management or something?
Or something. I don't know. I really don't know. But there's something inside the battery which is a program. And they hacked that. God. They found a way to hack that program.
That's crazy.
So the battery basically became the hacking tool.
Yeah.
You rewrote the battery's OS, I think it is, and then if you put that battery in a PSP with a specific program inside the memory stick,
it's like a backdoor for the
PSP. Yeah, it would unlock the PSP and allow you to put in your own OS, which would let you... It was basically a mod chip. You can run pirated software.
That's amazing.
It's just like...
Just incredible.
Yeah, just using... Like, the fact that they used the battery...
Yeah.
It's just like...
Yeah.
How did they find that? And how...
It's such outside-the-box thinking, like... Yeah. Just when you... Your only goal is to prove that you're smarter than somebody else.
Yeah.
There are no bounds to the creativity that you have. It's really incredible. Yeah.
Every now and then you get a taste of it. It's like, oh wow. what's possible? I am a cynic at heart. I think the worst of people, generally. Mm-hmm. Not people I know on a personal level. Like, people I know on a personal level, I'm like, I love my friends, I think they're all great, I love everybody, but as a whole in humanity, I have my heart is just like cold lump of coal.
It's kind of a naivete to thinking that the people that you know personally are different than the rest of humanity. We're probably all pretty much the same.
I consider it, well, it's the monkey sphere. It's
yeah,
like
yeah,
the
people. Exactly.
Yeah. Anyone who wonders what the monkey sphere is, read the Cracked article.
Yep.
But
I can't, by the way, I can't recommend their podcast highly enough, crack.com podcast.
I've heard nothing but good things.
Excellent, excellent podcast.
But every now and then, like, there's an anime I'm watching called Ore Monogatari, which is directly translated is My Story.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the English version of this anime is titled My Love Story, which is not incorrect, but incorrect.
All right.
Because the story is not a love story. But anyways, it looks on the surface, it looks like a love story, but it's not. Anyways, but that anime is so heartwarming and so fun. Like, it makes me... That's one of the few things I watch it, and I get hope for humanity. Like, I'm a cynic. I hate people as a whole, as a race in general, but I watch that anime. Every now and then, I'm just like, no, there's hope for people.
Yeah,
no, people... There is good out there. But, yes. Anyways, we've been going on for about an hour, well over,
yes,
I think.
Yes, rambling.
Rambling, just rambling.
Sorry.
No, this has been a rambling week. I think it's been, like, completely through. That was not my intent, like, to have a 3 week between our recordings. I was hoping
it's been a while.
Yeah. But, yeah, stuff happened. My back exploded. And
yeah, it's all right.
Yes.
I'm glad you got better.
Yes. But this has been the Wayward Podcast. I realize now that I forgot to introduce us.
Yes, we do.
This has been the Wayward Podcast on oneofus.net. You can email us at waywardpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter, Wayward Podcast, one word. You can check us out on oneofus.net where a bunch of different stuff goes up, generally geek related in all its facets. And this has been our episode where we just talk about stuff.
Yep.
I'm Toshi.
I'm Tony.
And we'll catch you next time. Oh, wait. We have an outro song, don't we?
Ah, shit.
You thought you'd get away with it.
I was going to get away.
No. So, what is our outro song, Tony?
Okay. I prepared this time because I knew I was going to be on the spot.
Yes.
And again, my taste in Japanese music is very old. I'm going to recommend Dreams Come True, mm-hmm. and the song is Kanashi Kisu.
Which means sorrowful kiss.
Yes.
So, we'll catch you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.